Tech session number 14972, Richard Atkinson, Reel 15.
Mr. Atkinson, Reel 15.
You say the beach was noisy. In what ways was it noisy?
Well, shell fire. You've thrown plenty of stuff over. Tanks, you know, the usual racket of that, and war racket, you know, vehicles and shouting and shelling, and the Navy was still throwing them over. And somebody saying, oh, that's the Exeter. There's another ton shell going over. It's like a train going over your top of your head. Planes, there's nothing about. Or the Americans strapped us on the beach. That was another thing. You know, that sort of noise. But the smell of cordite and death was stuck in your nostrils the most.
Were there a lot of bodies lying around?
Not a lot. I saw two or three swollen backwards and forwards in the water. By this time, I was sort of collecting them up, you know, and dragging them out. There was a little... See, I was H plus three. So, you know, 3 hours after, and they were... They weren't organised, but if they saw bodies, put them to one second thing they got. But there was no... Oh, yes, there was bodies knocking around and racking nothing.
Any German prisoners around?
I didn't see any there. They'll be collected up somewhere, but see, the Green Howards would take them. We, these jokes, we didn't... the Green Howards mostly, because we followed those through, and they did the fighting there.
How close were you to the attacking companies of your division that had gone in, of the battalion that had gone in?
I don't know, because we were scattered from them. We were transported. I don't know. Until we came ashore and picked up the Saints, I don't know where they were, how far in front they were. Wasn't it?
You say picked up the signs. How were you directed towards the people who'd gone on before you?
Yeah, the old TT. I mean, and there'd be a stake stuck in the ground, with a TT pinned on it, or there'd be a doorway with a TT and a narrow point on it, or things like that. And you were told, when you came off the beach, you know, this little ramp, turn sharp left into this place, be waterproof, drive onto the road, from there you start. You up to the road, you had orders, and from there you're on your own and you look. If you see an officer, you could say, you might meet bumped into one of your sergeant or something, where are you? Have you seen any of all? Or you see, follow the sign. And you picked them up. Because by this time they're charging inland, you know, they're hell for leather, they're 8 mile inland by evening.
Who was responsible for actually marking the route ahead of you?
The Pioneer Platoon. They were responsible for the burials, for the general, the tradesmen of the company, let's put it that way, because I could have been there, would have been a bricklayer. But, you know, they had a cobbler, they had a sign writer, they had the coffins, they had the crosses, you know, yeah. White crosses with names on. The Pioneer Platoon, they were responsible. They used to bury the dead and any job that was going, build a cookhouse or something else. And they used to mark a doorway, a farm doorway, or a gatepost, or on the side of the road, even, you know, a stone, to appear in TT. Well, it was crude, but you could, you know, it was there.
Had you been given maps of the area?
No, you got maps of the beach. No, you got no. From there, you didn't know what the objectives was. The company commanders and them would know, but what their job was.
Did you find them easily?
Oh, yes. Yeah, as I say, you picked the TTs up, then when they sort of petered out, and you were getting near to the front, and you picked, you say, ours was number 62. And you pick, you know, look for 62. TT was 62. And you headed for that. Then you come into where the lads were. You know, you may find a pioneer pit. Oh, where are they, John? Oh, you go up there, look, and you find them on the left. You know, things like that. You come up the road and say, hey, you're here now. You know, somebody will stop you. And then you gradually gather the energy to come off a different boat, you see.
Were you able to move freely, or was it congested, or any problems?
Oh, no. You're going that way. There's nothing coming back. You're going that way. And there wasn't that much. There was only your transport there. You know, there was no other regiments there because they were picking their own stuff up.
You mentioned that you were carrying a rum ration and blankets. What else were in your wagon for this initial move?
I don't think I had any ammunition on. I don't think I carried ammunition. I couldn't be sure, but I know I had a lot of compo packs on. That was the rations for 8 men for a day. See, and they were marked A, B, C's and D's. You kept an A for yourself because it was steak and kidney pudding. A D could be a McConaughey or a stew and steak. But I had them on, I had blankets on, I had the rum ration, the battalion rum ration, and I do know that because I got me all of the big stone jars, those. There'd be some spare uniforms, clothing. Stuff like that. I may have had the quartermaster's typewriter and stuff like that on that, but I was carrying his stuff, you see. And that would be emergency stuff you could call on if the colonel asked him, because, you know, the colonel is next to God with the quartermaster.
The rum ration that you mentioned there in the big stone flagons, was there some form of regulation as to how and when that would be issued and the amount?
Up to your colonel. Oh, the amount. Up to your colonel. Because I had a bad day, chucking down all day, and the lads were soaking wet in the open. The rum ration would be issued, but you didn't get neat. You got your rum ration and tea. It was always, you come here, Dixie, and put a half a mug of tea in, and your officer would be standing, dish out with a spoon, two spoonfuls in a Dixie, you know, in the mess can. But it was up to your colonel. He would say to you, I presume he'd discuss it with his quartermaster. I think they should have there's an attack going in, you got a rum ration. That was another point there. You got a rum ration at 2 o'clock in the morning, you'd expect. But it was up to him. And I must say our colonel was good. If there's the least inclination of cold weather or bad weather, rum ration will be served. He used to bring it round as well. He didn't queue up for it in line up, he used to come round with it.
Did it have an effect? Did it help?
Well, I didn't like it, but you couldn't give it to someone else. You wouldn't, if you didn't want it, you'd say, right, just have the tea. You know, you want your rum ration, yes, and you put in your tea, but you had to drink it then. You couldn't give it to someone else. It wouldn't let you. It stopped all, you know, made sure you didn't get inebriated, because it was very powerful stuff. It was like paint when it's put into your spoon, you know, it was a treacle. And it was black. There's no such thing as getting inebriated.
So it wasn't given out before an attack to make people.
Oh no!
Happy to go over.
It was there to fortify you, to warm you up, and to give you that little bit of glow. But there was no such thing as giving you false courage. Oh no. You may not get it full. It's just depending on the colonel. If he thought, you know, it's going to be a sticky one, that's give him a little bit cheer.
Where did you land?
Arnsville. It's just to the left. Nobody landed at Aramanch. They took that, they came on the back and took that, the 231 Brigade, which was in our 50 Div. They were the Hellifords and whatnot, that was in our division. Because they had replaced the 150 Brigade.
When you were going through, obviously you were going through part of the houses on the coast, or the villages and others, were they badly damaged?
Oh yes, Shepherd. And if they weren't, there's a big sign on the door, mine, keep out, even if they hadn't been checked, because German was a past master at booby traps, pen and a nice bowl of fruit or something on the table and a jar of wine, could be mined. And another thing, you see, the engineers was crafty. They knew they could be there that night, and they were going to have themselves a roof over their head. So mined, and you didn't go in, because there was minefields around. And you couldn't take the chance. You couldn't say, oh, that kid. So you didn't. You left it. But although damaged, yes. But we charged straight inland, you see. We didn't stop on the coast. There's nobody stopped on the coast. They were off it. Montgomery's orders was there had to be no thing, had to be inland.
Was the possibility that the roads might have been mined? Did that occur to you?
No, it didn't. You knew when you saw the sign someone had been in front. And another thing, you see, you learned this trick in the desert. You fall in a tank trap. The tank trucks, he had been. So you, if you saw tank trucks, you're driving the tank trucks because you knew it either had to be a ratchet mine or a tank mine, and you weren't having enough to set up. And then again, the bottom of your vehicle was all sandbagged in case it was mined, and it didn't. You're pretty safe. It could wreck the vehicle right off, but you were pretty safe because you just went, you know, just blew up and was damaged, and you were all right.
Did you see any civilians during this in this early stage?
Not at that time. By an even time, you could say, because actually by this time, you know, into his farmhouse, where Tumble was covered us in his cellars, and the civilians didn't really want you there. They weren't too happy, because you only brought death and destruction. And the Germans treated them very good, you know, the civilians there, because they were feeding the Germans and the German country. It was a beautiful, lush farm. And yet again, all the cows was up, legs up in the air, they're all dead. All the livestock had been killed in the fields and whatnot. They didn't want, because they were killed all that stuff and were pinching their wine. And the Germans hadn't done any of that to them. So there was no love lost at this stage between us.
So you felt at this stage the civilians really didn't welcome you?
No.
Because of the danger you brought?
Oh, yes. Well, you see, you know, we wrecked the houses and we killed our stock and wasn't their farmhouses. Not that you're allowed to sleep in the farmhouse. It's on the vehicle around about it. But you're naturally rummaging, which you shouldn't have been, but you did. None of us was angels.
Do you remember where you met up with the battalion?
Yes, just this side of Beer. It's a railway crossing. Because that night the Germans came over the railway line and they were as surprised what we were. They didn't know we were there. They were saying we didn't know what they were there. And they came over and it was an almighty clash, but I don't think it was any casualties. But what they must just have been raking around for, see what was happening. But it was a railway line. The railway line at the Beer from where I don't know.
So when you drove into your battalion headquarters, what was the drill then?
Oh, just a field, kept scattered out. Don't get close to each other. You're all dispersed, what we call dispersed, you know, 50 yards apart. So he was shelling us, you know. I mean, it wasn't a school out, and he was still loving the shells over. And he couldn't hit three or four vehicles at one go. And you sort of got your nose against the vehicle nose against the building or something to protect it, or yourself to protect it. If you could, if there was one there, someone else hadn't grabbed it. But you were just in open countryside. You weren't in towns, I think.
Did they take any of your supplies off immediately, or were they retained on the wagon?
Oh, I don't know. I think they may have come up and asked for some of the rations or something like that, I don't know. But if it would, it would be for throwing out for distribution in the morning. I don't think the companies had run into any fighting by this stage, so they weren't sort of depleted with anything. We hadn't really contacted our patrols, and they'd say this one that came off the railway, the battle went in there, just because we should have been in Beer that evening. Which we weren't, we took it the next year. But he walked out the next year, there was no fighting for it.
Were you surprised that it had been relatively easy on the first day?
Yes.
Were you expecting far more problems?
The shelling that was, you know, was still going on, but you're expecting the tanks and that went amongst you, which you didn't have any. So, you know, you're expecting that sort of stuff, which never materialised. It was relatively quiet. You know, in our eyes, it was quiet for all that was going on.
After this first day, what happened to you next?
Oh, well, that's when they took Beer, and then that's when we started to really get some fighting in. I shouldn't put it that way. That's when we started to come into contact with them, and, you know, we're advancing across cornfields, and these mourners down, and stuff like that, and long lives, and that's when our fighting started.
Where were you in this movement that was going on?
We were what you call B echelon. The company transport was E echelon, which would be 100 yards behind the lads. And you have to sit, in visual contact with them. And B echelon could be a mile half a mile just further back. You were all there, but in little layers, sort of style. And then, of course, you had your brigade and your division that further back still on that. But you never had no contact back that way. It was always that way. Up.
Did you get involved in any of the actions? Were the Germans so close to you in any point?
You got shelled every day and every night. And when you went up, you see, Jerusalem and that, you know, you've heard Darren's talk about Jerusalem, Jerusalem crossroads and that. It was organised hell, let's put it that way. But when you went up, they'll be saying, like, you're under observation, don't make no dust. See, if your vehicle made of dust, you used to shell the dust. The lad used to say, oh, get them bloody trucks up here, because you're under observation. And he said, shell the trucks, and they were there, and they were getting the clobbering just the same. But we used to leave them and come back, and they still got the clobbering, you see. And that's why they didn't like that transport up. If they could avoid it, we'd rather have it up by hand. Because, you know, like your trucks are a little thing, you should attract attention.
Did they break through to be echelon at any time? But did they get close to you?
No, there was no... I don't think I ever broke through. Got scary once or twice, but a lot of patrolling going on by this stage. See, now again, you do the stupidest things you can think of. But see, the other time would come down for some reason or other, we'd be there. And you see, the other time say, Dick, you know, that's the Durham's. Dick, there's a shifty patrol going up next. Shifty, that's always party for a lookout patrol. Have a scoot around, see what's happening. There's a shifty patrol going, do you want to go? Why? Well, you could pick something up. You never know, you know, you go through houses. Yeah, and you go up, and you clatter, you bump into the Germans, and you say to yourself, what the hell am I doing here, you silly son? So you're going to be sitting back there, and it's only a mile away, but you know, you're only getting shelled there. You're in contact with them there. It's things like that. That's what used to go on there. A lot of that patrol and whatnot.
And you got involved in that personally?
Once. Never again. I got fastened in the hen house, and I said, I'll never be so stupid to do this again.
Can you tell me what happened?
Well, as I say, the colonel said, Dick, there's a lookout patrol going around tonight. Do you want to have a look? And I said, hell yes, why not? He says, you never know what you can pick up because, you know, everybody's on the fiddle. Goes up, and he got his eye on when he started throwing them at us. And I dived in his hen house, and the hens were squawking and whatnot, and I don't like hens. And I was pinned in there for about 20 minutes, and I says to myself, after I said a few prayers, I'll never do this again. Quieted down, I got out and came back, and I never did it again. No.
Was this a night or day patrol?
All night time. It was all night time.
And did you black up for it?
No. Is that green? You didn't, you know, never in your mind. The patrol would be going up this, like, chilly area, long grades. And you'd be on one side of the road and you'd be on the other side. You wouldn't know. Unless you actually bumped him and there's firing going on, shelling. It's rifle fire. You wouldn't know. You could pass each other. And actually, it was a game. You're out to see what you get pinched. And it sharp learned your lesson, of course. You didn't bother.
Was this a form of looting that you were all into?
Oh, yes.
What kind of things were you particularly looking for?
Well, you see that. Later, I picked a pair of candlesticks up, chain of candlesticks, and I was sitting in a henpie with a pair of chain of candlesticks in my hand. I'm saying, what the hell's the good of these to me? I don't even have a candle. You know. And I just put them down. Stuff like, you know, young, daft, stupid.
What were the main attractions or attractive targets for looting? What were the men looking for particularly?
Well, we used to pinch his calvados. Saying you used to make your bed. Well, your bed was just a blanket on the floor. You used to get little egg cups, get in, and drink your egg cups. Because we weren't used to spirits. You used to pass out your own kip. And the shells would come over and you'd start jumping out and scattering about and things like that. But the captain quartermaster, he'd be on patrol. You see, the transport picked it as its own vehicle lines. He'd be on thing. Now, Claude, they all had penthouse on the side of that vehicle, canvas things, used to roll them off like a lean-to. And he'd have his camp bed in there. starts shouting, this thing, he shouts, "Sandy, Sandy," and I run across and I tripped over the cow room and I fell in bed with him. He said to me, "Oh, do you want to speak? You're not getting in bed with us." He says, "I want every shell of Logan where it landed." Well, you couldn't tell it. You know, it was landing over there. No idea of direction. So he just didn't bother, but, you know, things like that. But he still slept in his car bed to save the vehicle. But the looting, you're picking stuff up. 9 times out of 10, it was no good to you. Alarm clock. You know, stuff like that. Penner. 9 days. They couldn't carry it anyway. That I threw it away. There's no. I was lucky I had a toolbox and a vehicle. I could put something in there. But 9 days out of 10, you couldn't carry the stuff.
You mentioned occasionally coming across a calver dust supply. Did this make men in such a drunken state that they weren't really fit enough to move that when they had to move?
Oh, yes, you could get in that state.
What happened then?
Well, I don't think it happened. I think it was tumbled, you know, you told yourself it was a stupid thing. But you see, it was fiery spirits brandy made with apples, and it was powerful stuff. And we were drinking it with a little thimble things, little egg cup things. And you'll find that you were just stupid. Well, you used to flake out. And look how if you weren't called, but if you had been called, you'd have been on the court martial because you're unfit for duty. But I think we soon found, you know, you can have a little nip to fortify yourself, but not to go as the first night we did.
Was it done on a large scale, or many people doing it at the same time?
The transport, there was quite a few of us tried it. I don't think the company lads had that contact with it. They would probably find a farm or somewhere where they could get it, but I don't think I think the sergeant would be a little bit strict on that. Because, they were at the sharp end.
The attacks across the cornfield, which you mentioned, which must have been in there after a week or so of the advance. Have you any memories of that particular one? That was at Langevre.
Well, we couldn't believe it. It was so silly. You know, the old-fashioned battles, like you hear about Waterloo, where the crowds are standing on the hill behind, watching them going on. It was like that. We're standing watching the lads go across the cornfield, and they got the corn was waist high, and they were taking this wood on the outskirts of, not a wood, like a copse thing, and that was our objective, I believe. And they got nearly when he opened up, he was dug in the side of this, and nobody bothered. And he just fed along the top of the corn, and all dead. Well, you know, they don't amongst the corn, we couldn't do it. Of course, by this time, there's raging battles going on for a long period. And I think it was taken about 12 or 13 times, you know, in and out, but eventually took it. And the farmer come cut his corn, and that's when he cut round them, and they're lying there in the corn. When he cut his corn, he fed them, and that's when we're buying them. By this time, they're black dummy things.
And you were, in effect, watching this going on?
Yeah. I mean, you were far enough back to be out of it, but close enough to see it. You know, you couldn't understand it. I mean, I actually personally didn't see that, but my friend George Mountfield, his truck happened to be the nearest to it. He says to me, have you seen the other scenes? And it's a stupid thing. And he explained, and when the farmer cut his corn 2 days after this, they were there. About 10 of them lying. See, the lads hadn't been told they were there. Nobody knew they were there. If they did, nobody told us. And I just dug in to save this wood thing.
Had there been any attempt, in your knowledge, to soften the positions up? Guns, no. Air Force, no. What have you?
I mean, the artillery was there with you. They're up, we used to call them a 5-mile snipers. They're always up amongst you. And when called on, they used to do it. But, no, there's been no softening up. Because, you know, Jerry was getting wise to this stage, and the lads were there for you. I told you in front of you, you're following up. And Jerry was past master, keeping his head down to die away, then coming up.
The losses were quite heavy.
Yes. I would say so anyway. Pioneers was kept pretty busy.
And the commanding officer was killed there. Who
there.
Took over from him?
Wood. Mog. He was second in command, and he became CEO.
He'd been with you a few weeks. What was he like?
Well, we didn't have much contact with him, really. you know, he didn't. He was more giving officers their orders and whatnot. You'd see him, but you wouldn't. You wouldn't talk. Well, you weren't allowed to talk to an officer. You'd ask your sergeant's permission to talk to an officer. Yeah, you know, if I had a grievance and I want to say something, I'd have to say to the sergeant, "Can I have a word with, MT or Eric Cooper? Can I have a word with Mr. Hooper, please?" It was always Mister, and he would go and ask him. And if he was on parade, he had to speak to me, and I could answer him. I couldn't speak to him, so you really didn't have much connection with officers. But they were a sort of. You got the odd ones that was pleasant and nice and good and whatnot, but the majority weren't.
Were you pulled into rest for any period of time between actions?
No, you just pulled back. They went through you and you stayed where you were. Oh no, there's no such thing as coming off for rest.
No chance of a leave anywhere.
Oh no, you bring you back for a bath. Thing there, the organisation was terrific. I mean, we come back into Beer from Tilly, mobile baths was there for fresh baths, and that was only the war had only been going on a week or so, fortnight, and they had the mobile bakeries there where you can fresh bread, we're getting baths. Because the Red Cap says to me, he says to me, fresh baths, he says, these fellas should be up the front line, all usual Red Caps. So that was he says, for your information, there's anybody in the front line, we're all down here having a bath, so you could just leave it bare. Because, you knew that you'd leave a couple of men, but you'd come back and you all had baths. So you went in one end, you took your clothes off, your shirt and the towel and socks, underpants. You went and had a shower. When you come up there, and you're given another one. A shirt, towel, socks and all that.
You replaced your clothing?
Yeah. Well, that was somebody else's that had been washed. But then yours would be washed and they've got someone else. The mobile laundries and that was there. But you had a clean set of clothing. So, as I say, you went in, like this, stripped off, had a bath, gone to the end, come back again, but with clean clothes on. That's how organised they were. They were organised, I must say that. Yeah, well, we're eating fresh bread by this time. Stuff like that.
And where was that coming from, the fresh bread?
The bakery. It was there, working, up and work. And our beer was taken on the 7th of June, or something, just the day after. And all these was in beer by this time. The organisation... Well, you find out these things afterwards must have been terrific. It had to be, the way things worked. It seemed so smooth. Your rations was coming up. I'll admit, only combo packs and stuff like that in bulk, but I mean...
And they varied in what they had in them, you were saying?
Yeah, on each side of them, they're a brown wooden box, and it had so much toilet paper in, 7 cigarettes a man, 40 men's rations, for 24 hours, so much dry tea, sugar and bacon and the toilet paper, so many bottles of sweets, so many cigarettes. But on each side of each pack had an A, a B, C and D. As I say, A was steak and kidney puddings, lion steak and kidney puddings. So that's you see, how that we never get an A pack? Well, it was common sense. I wasn't going to give him an A pack and eat a D. So he got the D and I ate the A. Oh yeah, you're amongst yourselves, the 8 or 14 that was governed together. And your mates come first, and the quartermaster was the same, his mates come first and whatnot. But the, as I say, one was steak and kidney, one was McConaughey. One would be corned beef, things like that, but it was 4 different packs. And Sharp knew that D had a good treacle pudding in, but he didn't. He had rice pudding in, things like that, little things like that. You found these things out.
Did that mean that when you'd all had your choice of the particular pack...
Oh, you didn't get a choice, you got what you were given.
Did the men at the front just get what was left over of the pack?
Oh, no. The quartermaster would say, my men's going to have so many years. You think they got, you see. And, we'll say there was 50 A packs and 50 D packs. To be worked out, each company would get 5, 5, 5, 5. And then... The companies had to decide who got the ears in that way, you see. But that, plod, I say, was strict that way. Fair, everybody, there was no such thing as a favourite group getting that. But when it got down to the companies, they had their own distribution set, way of doing it. You see, another one, we have distance for out, you get Canadian bacon. It was a tin. And it was in a long strip. I've never seen such long pigs in my life. It was a long, long strip. And it was 8 men. You used to heat the tin up and boil it. So it was red hot. Give it to the men, yeah, because you had your tin up in your belt. Open the tin, and you used to cut it up into 8 pieces for your thing. So it was Canadian bacon in a tin. And a long, round, 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 and long, rush like that.
Good stuff.
Oh, yes, good stuff, yes.